Hello and welcome along to the RTE Rugby Podcast. Bernard Jackman's with me in studio this morning. Johnny Holland is on the line. And fellas, it's Leinster versus Munster this week. The season's up and running now, Bernard.
Yeah, it definitely feels like this is the start of the season. There's been some good games, but it's been quite a slow build-up. Obviously, the Lions went on into the middle of summer, and there's no European games pre-November this year. So this is effectively the big one for me to kickstart Irish rugby's professional season. And obviously, for these players who play, they won't play the following week in the URC. So it's like a final trial in some aspects.
It is a funny one, Johnny, the way we're just so used to the layout of the season. I don't think you have it in any other leagues where there is a specific fixture. Like, you know, you can count on Leinster against Munster in Dublin around 4 or 5 weeks into the season, and then you count in the return fixture just after Christmas down in Limerick. It is a nice way to just kind of like set little milestones along the campaign.
Yeah, it is, and it comes at a good time. But then you get into, you know, November series, and then you get back into Europe. So it does feel like definitely this time around. Anyway, it's the one where I think they're both predicted to go quite strong, aren't they? That's the one where you're going to get full selections, which we don't always land on at this time of the year. You can get, like, you know, chopping and changing, but this is the one, because of the Lions year and everything else, that you're going to get full selections against each other for the first time. And I know you're going to tee up a conversation in a certain position, but this is the first time we'll get a really full selection. Like, even someone like Tadhg Byrne, is he only going to play once and then you go off to Irish camp and come back for Europe? Like, we don't really see that always. So the timing of it means that we get Munster and Leinster in Dublin with two cracking sides.
On the Irish players, and as Johnny said, like, Tadhg Byrne's just going to be back for this week. There's an Irish squad being announced later on this afternoon. Obviously, the squad will probably be announced by the time a lot of people are listening to this, so we won't really be talking about any of those selections or anything like that. But there are a good few players that are going to be part of this Ireland Autumn Nation squad who will have one game, maybe even just 40-odd minutes or so under their belt heading in. The squad are due to head to Chicago, I think, this day next week. Yeah. They're going over quite early. So in theory, those players are going to be out of commission for round 5 of the URC. Do you see a scenario where some players are going to be left behind just to get another few minutes under their belt in the URC? I get why Farrell's probably going over that early, because he hasn't had his hands on these players for a long period of time. But is there a balance to be made with a handful of players maybe where you could say, do you know what, stay back and get a few extra minutes? Like Ulster, for example, are down in South Africa at the moment.
Yeah.
And, you know, they haven't announced a touring squad. So have they brought some, you know, a Stuart McCluskey and Ian Henderson, maybe, if he's in the Irish squad, Nick Timoney, if he's around the fringes of that. What's their schedule going to be for the next 2 weeks?
Look, I think I'd love to see the Irish players who are Ulster players be allowed to go to South Africa for that first game and then come back. You know, I think Farrell will want to have his 35 players that he's going to pick later on in Chicago for that full prep. So whatever it is, 10 days prep into the All Blacks, because it's so important they all get back on the same page. But also, I think Ulster could potentially win this week in South Africa with their best team, which would be massive for them. And it would be another game for their players. And I think there's no point in saying, oh, we wish we had our frontliners getting more game time, if you actually take away the opportunity to get game time for them. I don't think he'd leave players back here unless it was someone like Caelan Doris, who was fit to play round 5 of the URC.
Like Dan Sheehan did just before the Six Nations.
That's right, yeah. So I think all the others bar Caelan Doris, from my understanding, are going to have played at least some rugby in the URC. So you saw Ronan Keller play last week, Dan Sheehan plays this week. I think Gibson Park is fit, etc. So everyone will have at least access to one game. Mac Bundy, Finney Beenham will be fit for Connacht this week. But Caelan Doris, my understanding, isn't fit for this week, but is potentially fit for the All Blacks. Okay, so do you say, right, we're going to leave him for the All Blacks, let him play round 5 of the URC, then come over to Chicago, be part of, maybe be on the bench against the All Blacks, or that game time, and then a week in Chicago with the team will tee him up to be ready for the first home game in November? They're the things I think that Farrell is going to have to work out. And it's not easy, there's a lot of moving parts. The counter argument is the travel, like sending those Ulster Irish players to South Africa just for 1 week is a big ask. But I think because they've got to come home and then go to Chicago, but because if they're not playing the following weekend, that'll be okay too. And it will have them give them the best possible chance of being selected for the All Blacks match. So I'm sure there's been lots of conversations. I'm sure Leo Cullen, Clayton McMillan, Stuart Lancaster and Richie Murphy know what's happening. It's just what they've been able to negotiate and to do it on a player-by-player basis.
To bring it back to Leinster against Munster this weekend, Johnny, I'm pretty sure we probably asked you this before. You had won one Leinster-Munster game, and it was a fairly eventful one. You'd quite a few involvements on the score sheet, a try, a couple of conversions, a couple of penalties or something, was it?
Yeah, I'm not counting, but I had 13 points. That was 16-13. And
you scored all of the Munster points. It was Leinster 16, Johnny Holland 13.
Yeah. Jesus, don't say that loud. no, but I did. I squirted in for a try. I think I just kind of ducked my way into the corner. But I kicked all right that day, and it was... I had a good day out, to be fair, even though we had lost. And it seems like, you know, Munster haven't had good days out in Dublin even since then. And there was a tap penalty at the end of the game. I won't mention the player that tapped it and got turned over. But it was a missed opportunity, you know, last couple of minutes with possession and we lost. And obviously it was massively disappointing. At the time, we probably didn't see the drought coming in Dublin, you know, but it was a huge opportunity to beat them in the Aviva. And to be fair, I was a couple of games in compared to other lads, so I was still quite happy with my own experience, despite the fact that we'd lost. And you hear a lot of pros saying, oh no, team first, blah, blah, blah. You still have to be happy with your own performance. That was a big occasion for me because I remember the team sheet and stuff. And, you know, I think, was that the game, Easton and Saba coming off the scrum? Like, you know, when teams have their wing coming off the scrum, hit off the nine, and then Benteo coming the other side. So I've been sandwiched by Easton Asewa and Benteo, and that's a situation I hadn't been in, you know, watching Johnny Sexton. That was 2016, and he was player of the year, world player of the year in 2018. So he was on that trajectory where couldn't take a rise off him. Like, it was an education, you know. So good day out, but obviously we'd lost, which is disappointing, but they're ferocious games.
Was it everything you kind of expected it would be?
Do you know, the thing for young players is that it was tough, and it was a period in the first half, I remember, where I got kind of stuck in the 22-metre attack. We were just outside the 22, which is an awkward area. Can you get in and then get into your kind of rumble? You don't know which kind of, are you in your phase play, outfield phase play, or are you in your 22 phase play? And it was one of those areas you get stuck in. We kicked a penalty in front of the post there, I think, and just got a score out of it. And I remember thinking, this is not that bad. You know, it was a tier one game, put it that way, in club rugby. But you kind of realise that you do survive them, like, and you do have moments in them. And it was probably a realisation that players aren't that far away. Like, it would have been used in Munster a lot for a long time that, like, Conor Murray, when he came in, he was obviously very ready, but like it took an injury or two and he was in and he was a lion as a result. Like, you know, he was very, very close. And they would use that for a long time, being like, you know, you're an injury away from actually playing, or you might be two opportunities away from actually playing. And fellas don't probably realise that, and you get put on the stage and fellas grow with that, like, you know. So it was probably one of those realisation moments, but short-lived afterwards, to be fair.
It's become an incredibly one-sided rivalry, Birch, in terms of the results, but in fairness to it, like, it is impressive how it is still as big a fixture as it has ever been. I know it's going to be 40,000, maybe between 40,000 and 50,000 at Croke Park this weekend, which isn't going to look as good compared to the 80 that were there last year. My good feeling would be, to be honest, it's probably the Croke Park novelty wearing off rather than any disillusionment with the fixture. Because I think over the last few years, 40,000 at the Aviva Stadium for this game was pretty much par for the course. You're consistently selling it out at Thomond Park every year. I think if they ever moved that Munster-Leinster Christmas game down to Cork, you'd instantly sell out Porky Cueve as well. The appetite is still very much there. And if you look across the world, it's head and shoulders the biggest club game in world rugby.
Yeah, it's still massive. I think they're hoping to get 50,000. I think tickets have picked up the last couple of days, and they expect when the teams are announced, hopefully tomorrow, or Thursday, that again they'll get another bounce. But I agree with you. I think the novelty of Croke Park has worn off a little bit.
And probably speaks to the fact that Leinster are playing La Rochelle at the Aviva at the Aviva this year. 100%.
And I think that's right.
It's a smart way to do it.
I still think this has the potential to kick on again. It just takes Munster to beat Leinster kind of once with the new generation, the McMillan generation. And it'll all kick off. I think the challenge for Munster is, I think Leinster are going to be very strong this weekend. And I thought Leinster's returning players looked really sharp. against the Sharks. So probably 2 weeks ago, you're looking at that fixture and you're saying, well, Munster are going to have continuity. They'll have given everyone a game. McMillan will know his best team. They'll obviously go into the game with a bit of confidence because they're probably going to go in 3-from-3, which they are. And then saw Leinster snap into action on Saturday. And, you know, those really good players sometimes can just hit the ground running and look like they did. Josh Van der Fleer, Ronan Keller, Tyke Furlong, etc. James Lowe looked really sharp for their first hit out. So that'll be the challenge for Munster. And also Leinster, you know, Leinster need to keep winning now because obviously they lost the first two games in South Africa. So Munster have been winning without playing brilliantly, and it's a free shot for them, really.
Yeah, and it's set up kind of, they're coming into this game in a different situation than they have been in the last three seasons. Last year, you look at it, they'd won 2 out of 3 games coming into that Leinster fixture last year, but the defeat was the zebra one, and they were in the early stages of what ended up being another injury crisis. And I think over the last 12 months, we've clearly realised now things weren't really right under Graham Rowntree. It wasn't a particularly happy camp. You're all right there.
Sorry.
And then the two previous seasons as well, it was kind of Munster coming into that early season game against Leinster, off form, injuries building up. And I think in fairness, if you actually look back at those last three regular season Dublin meetings between the two sides, what Munster have actually done has been reasonable enough, all things considered. They've actually put in like okay performances, but just nowhere good enough to beat Leinster on the day. Like, Johnny, you were writing in your column this week, like, this is the opportunity now for Clayton McMillan's Munster to go out and make a statement. They're not coming in already looking to make up ground on people in the URC. They're looking down the table rather than up on it. This is the opportunity now to plant your flag and say, look, we're here.
Yeah, it is. It's a huge opportunity, but it's an opportunity just because I think, you know, the game is going to be so heavily contested. Like, Leinster are going to be very strong. The personnel make a massive difference for Leinster, like Bernard said it, but I think it's going to be even more so this weekend. You get more guys back, and if you look at what Leinster tried to do in the first two games in South Africa compared to what they did in round three, you can't get away from the fact that personnel matter. Like, you know, you can try to do whatever you want, but better players make better decisions, they have better individual outcomes. And I don't like reducing sport to that, because like, you do think that, you know, everyone has a chance, everyone can perform, but actually, you know, when you put more internationals and Lions on the pitch, it obviously becomes easier to coach a strategy and all the rest of it. And I thought Leinster were so kind of intricate at the weekend. I think there was a lot of things I would have kind of picked up on in terms of changing their kicking game. I thought they lost a lot of kick battles in South Africa, and they varied that quite a bit. I can go into that in a minute if you want, but I thought their attacking game was a little bit different as well. That wide passing, like, you'd assume Prendergast will come back in, and that wide passing game, like, they're normally, you see an attack, you got a hit and a boot, or a kind of a front line and a back line player, and it could be like a 12 in the front line and the winger at the back, but Leinster are actually missing the two of them in between, like a tunnel pass to the next centre outside them, and then it's getting another pass out wide to, like, you've seen Soroka and Deegan getting into the wide channels nice and square, and they were really, you know, Harry Burns' passing was class as well, to be fair, it's not just Prendergast. So they were adding a different dimension to their attacking game that I don't think was as fluid before now, and building a kicking game with that. I suppose when I say personnel, you know, they lost a lot of kick battles, kick duels in the first game against Stormers. But then you put Jamie Osborne on the pitch, who just, you know, commands the air, and you win back possession a little bit easier. It's a lot harder to compete with them. But like, Munster do have a chance, and I think, like, there are positions on the pitch now, second row, centre, where you'd hate to be the one picking them. You know, the Fineen Witcherly is actually playing some of his best rugby, I would say, but Edwin Adogbo will add a different dimension to them when he gets enough rugby to start.
And then throw Ty Byrne in the mix as well.
Ty Byrne, yeah, sorry. Put Ty Byrne back in there. Whether he plays second row or six or wherever he plays, their centres, I wouldn't like to pick their centres at the weekend, because you're going to let someone down. So I do think they're on the right trajectory, but I wrote about the fact that I don't think Munster's form is reflective of their results, if you know what I mean. Like, they did struggle against Edinburgh, and they had their struggles against Cardiff, whereas Leinster going the other way, struggled early on getting bodies back, and I think last week's performance is a bit of a danger for what's coming at the weekend.
Yeah, will we carry on Leinster's performance at the weekend, because it was the first time this season that they really, really clicked. I know they scored tries obviously in Pretoria against the Bulls, but if you were to compare the attack from Saturday against the Sharks to the Stormers 2.5 weeks ago, it is, I mean, it literally is two different teams in terms of personnel as well. A handful of players jumped out. You mentioned Josh van der Vlier.
Yeah.
You mentioned those lines returning as well. Jamie Osborne was brilliant at fullback. What a perfect audition he had for trying to take that 15 jersey for the Autumn Nation Series. But also, like, a handful of the other less high-profile names. Like, Paddy McCarthy was probably his best performance in a Leinster shirt as well. Alex Soroka.
Excellent.
Who... I'm going to get, you know, I'll give you your due. He was your man at the start of the season as well. He's really, really fitted in comfortably so far this season as well. Harry Byrne, probably the best Leinster performance he's had in a couple of years, I'd say. Things really did look like they were starting to click for them.
Yeah, I suppose last man first, Harry Byrne, I thought he's always had an incredible amount of talent. And let's not forget, like, he was being brought into Irish squads 4 years ago, and seen as being the heir apparent, obviously. He was never really Leinster's first choice, like, for a season as such. But I think there's been a maturity in his game. I know, speaking to Pat Lamb before he brought him over last year and after he brought him over, how impressed they were with his rugby brain. It was just funny, he had scouted Bristol for Leinster pre their European Cup as kind of the guy who was going to be running the second team attack.
Yeah.
So when Pat rang him, he was able to tell Pat in intricate
detail. He was able to slot straight into the team.
Able to convince him over the phone that he knew exactly how Bristol played. Like, it's funny how things work out, because Bristol had an injury crisis and that led to Pat, I suppose, endorsing the loan deal. And he went over and did well. He had a couple of little knocks, but he did very well. And I think he's just come back and he just looked... He looks just more composed, more mature. And he would have been. He's been around the block enough now, even though he's 26, to know that it was really important he laid down a marker on Saturday, because everyone's talking Sam. But Harry would be smart enough to know if he gets ahead of Sam, he's very much in the picture to be on the bench for Ireland, at least. And I thought, it's one thing understanding that, but it's another thing taking the opportunity. And I just thought his passing game, his decision when to run kick, his kicking game, his general composure allowed Leinster to get those wide channels, where we know the Sharks are quite weak. But then you have good athletes like Max Deegan, Caelan Doris as forward carriers and ball players. And then you have, you know, players like Jimmy O'Brien, James Lowe and Jamie Osborne on the edge as well. And, you know, the Sharks had no answer to that. But I thought he pulled the strings really well. And then, yeah, it is Paddy McCarthy. You know, he was scrummaging with Ronan Keller and Ty Furlong, so it was easier than it was late in the game when Leinster made their subs and the Sharks brought on their Springbok front row replacements. But I thought there was so much to like about him, particularly...
There was so much more in his performance than scrummaging.
Yeah, scrummaging, yeah. No, he offered himself as a ball carrier. He is a very explosive ball carrier and has always been. He has this kind of... He has a strength and power that seems to be bigger than his actual physical size. When he hits people... They stay hit, and that's been noticed all the way through school. And it was good to see it in the Viva. They're not at pro level. So he laid out a marker. Yeah, I thought Deeney, actually, again, Deeney, who, you know, maybe came back from South Africa, or certainly after the Stormers, was one of the players you have a question mark around. Leo has rewarded him with another chance, and him and Baird together in the second row were a good combination. So all in all, I think, you know, Leinster have gone from being a team who looked undercooked against the Stormers, completely undercooked physically, tactically, and then, you know, a couple of weeks later, put some better players in, as Johnny said, home game, and they look back like the Leinster of old. But the challenge for Munster is, if you look at teams who beat Leinster over the last couple of years, and there hasn't been many, you can't do it like La Rochelle, because Munster don't have that size, mass, power, okay? Can they do it like Northampton? Yeah, potentially, but that's not really how they've been playing.
And everything has to click.
Everything has to click, right? So, but again, you have to fire shots or whatever. Yeah. So, but I don't know if they can do it like Northampton, because Northampton have a way of playing, and Munster had a way of playing under Prendergast that it's still very new for Clayton McMillan to say what's the Clayton McMillan style. I think if you look at how Ulster under Dan McFarland, and I'm going back a little bit here, how Ulster beat Leinster in the RDS, how Ulster could have beaten Leinster in a quarterfinal in Europe, there is another way to play. And it's not as obvious, because I wouldn't say Leinster are weak in the air. Jamie Osborne, for example, is very strong. Jimmy O'Brien's a fullback, can play a wing. You know, they're not weak in the air, but I think you have to basically try and take away their power and their rush defence by not giving them energy from that and playing away from it, and hope that on that day you can actually dominate that area. So that just, I'm fascinated to see what how Munster set up to play against Leinster, because I think if Munster played their normal game, and there's nothing wrong with it, but it's still building. It's four games into Clayton McMillan's regime. I think it'll be hard for them to beat Leinster, but if they vary it up a little bit and have a specific game plan for this game, a kind of a commando type game plan, just go there and see what you can get out of it by implementing it better and have an element of surprise, I think it could be a fascinating contest.
Johnny, what would be your target areas if you were drawing up a Munster game plan this week?
Jeez, it's very hard when you see Leinster picking their, like Bernard said, like Leinster struggling there definitely in South Africa, but then you put Jamie Osborne back in there and I think he tied it up a lot of things, because like Sharks went to this kind of wedge topper kick over the top of the ruck from like deep in their own half, which Leinster have actually done as well under Gibson Park a lot. And you know, sometimes you have your game plan, like we'll get them in the air and they go and clean up in the air and you're like, geez, I thought we were going to get possession there and take away some of their power. And then you go to these kind of mid kicks and Jamie Osborne just turned and caught it. You know, it was kind of like you're hoping there's a bit of animation on the edges and then you catch them on the midfield kick, but he just turned and caught it. That took that element away from the Sharks. So it's going to be very difficult. I think it's one of those games where you just need individuals to win their battles as well. Like, you know, you need Tadhg Byrne to step up, you know, own a line out and win a few balls on the ground. You need wingers to get up in the air and beat their own opposite number. You know, those are the kind of battles I think you're going to have to get. And then I do agree, like, they're not as free-flowing as what Northampton can be when they get into full-flow attack, but you do have a kind of an intricate Munster attacking system and philosophy that will cause teams problems. But you need, and I know the selection at centre is something I'd have a big question mark over, but probably Nankivell and Tom Farrell for me, despite what Dan Kelly has been doing. But Nankivell has to cause havoc in midfield and Tom Farrell has to have his deceptive, you know, he had a couple of line breaks or offloads to line breaks last week again, and you need a couple of those moments out of him, and he's had them last year as well. So I don't think they'll go massively away from their identity. I think Bernard's right, they have to come with something. So what I would have thought with Leinster last week, they lost the air in South Africa and then they had a massively different kicking game plan. A lot of run kicks at the start, and when Sharks started flattening up, they went to contestables from Fintan Gunn, and then when they went to a contestable, they actually changed the picture, hit up the middle, and a crossfield contestable from Harry Byrne. So they just varied it completely, never let Sharks settle. And I think Munster have to have that mentality where they're going to keep catching Leinster on a different thing. So if they go to a tight game, then they break away and go to a wider play. If they get into a kind of a one-dimensional kicking game plan to win a ball back, you move it before they get used to it, and they have to go with that kind of element of surprise, I would think, to catch them in Dublin.
Just on, I think we need to be careful not to overestimate the value of the win, of how good Leinster looked because of how poor the Sharks were. Like, realistically, the Sharks, I was even watching them warm up, like they had no idea of what
to
do.
Their only avenue into the game was Jaden Hendricks putting up a box, putting up a box kick down the tram tracks,
that's right,
and hoping for a breaking ball.
They came with no plan or confidence in what they're trying to do to try and break Leinster down. So hence Leinster were never really tested defensively, and also they had so many ins into the game because of ill discipline. You know, so like they were counter rooking on the edge, getting ground, and someone would just come in from an offside position, and then next thing Leinster on the 22. So Leinster looked really sharp. Leinster took them apart very accurately, but it wasn't a contest in any, like, given the two teams on paper, the Sharks should have been a proper match for Leinster, and they weren't. So Munster are way better side than the Sharks, in my opinion.
And even to that, like, Mbanambi came on and threw two lineouts that they lost, didn't they? And the only try that they scored was an intercept from a huge Harry Byrne pass to the edge, which was a bit wild, actually, to be fair. The only ball they got back, Neil, I think, was the one that, again, it was Harry Byrne in the air, but the scraps, I think Sharks won the scraps. So, like, they were pretty poor, to be fair. But I think the opposite side of that, Bernard, is that, like, you know, Munster were beaten physically by Edinburgh, and if it wasn't for our physicality in that game, four yellow cards and a whole host of penalties that were ridiculous. Even I was a bit disappointed even by Darcy Graham. Like, he just such good things and such poor things. Like, you know, taking, who did he take out in the air near the end? And it's like,
oh, amateur, in the last 5 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah. He's a lion, like, and some of the amateurism from Edinburgh for a game they actually should have won, I would say. But Munster have, they found a way against Cardiff, they found a way against Edinburgh. And if they keep that kind of, you can't put that into the team, like Clayton McMillan's in their 3 games and they're fighting for him. Like, and I think that's a huge quality for them. Something that they can certainly build on and use that edge to, you know, if you're hard to beat, you're hard to beat. Like, teams are going to struggle against you at times and you build a bit of confidence. So hopefully they can build on that part, but bring out the quality that they showed in the Scarlets game as well.
We're obviously expecting both teams to be pretty close to full strength. We'll probably find out Munster's selection on Thursday afternoon. They've been naming a little bit earlier this season. How much of their hopes would you pin on Craig Casey being fit or not?
I think it's massive for them. And that's no disrespect to the other two nines that we've seen, Coughlin and Patterson. But Casey is the go-to player for Munster. He makes them tick. He's a threat around the breakdown, his speed of pass. And I think, that's why their attack has looked less fluid, you know, post-Scarlets, because he's been out. So their chances of winning go up massively if he's fit to play.
Johnny?
No, I agree. Like, I thought Eaton came on and did really well at the weekend. But Craig Casey's delivery, his energy, I think actually his energy is the intangible we won't see on a screen. His energy is ridiculous. And I remember speaking to players about him. He's just like that all the time. You know, it's not just a chirpy nine on the pitch. He's just full of energy. And I think that has come out in, like, you know, being selected as captain for games and stuff like that. Like, he is a leader of standards around the place and energy and what he brings to the game. So I think if you're done with the element of surprise and maybe keeping Leinster on their toes, he's certainly a player that you'd get a bit more nervous about if he was selected, if you were a Leinster player.
One more Munster selection call for this weekend. What way would you be leaning in terms of the back three as well? Because that also looks fairly wide open. Calvin Nash had to wait until last week to get his first opportunity of the season, but I actually thought with the limited ball he had, he did really well. Like, the presence of mind in those first couple of minutes there's a great wide angle, the shot from behind the goal just before that opening try, where as soon as the ball goes out of play, Calvin Nash is deep in the backfield. He's close to his own try line. And as soon as that ball crosses the line, you can actually see him sprinting as hard as he can to get up towards that 5 metres, just on the off chance that there's a quick ball there. I'd say that's the sort of thing a coach loves to see, like on a Monday morning review and stuff like that. But you've also had Tacker Abrahams, who looked very, very good in the first couple of the games. Shane Daly, who's played very well. Mike Haley then at full back as well. A lot of choices to be made there.
Yeah, I definitely play Abrahams. I think if you're going to beat Leinster, you need someone like him who can make something happen from nothing. And I'd go Haley at fullback, and I'd go Nash, and I'd keep Daly on the bench. I think Nash is such a busy player. He does a lot of damage all over the field, and I would go for him, Abrahams, and Haley.
Johnny?
Is Mike Haley going to be fit? I know he had a HIA. I think there was a question mark over his fitness was there, but if he misses out, I think Shane Daly could play a full back. And I think he's been playing good rugby as well, but I wouldn't disagree with Bernard, to be fair.
Yeah, and throw Andrew Smith obviously into the mix there as well.
I actually think Andrew Smith, like that connection with Calvin for the first try, I think he's that element of surprise as well. He plays, it's not loose, but it's definitely with spirit, you know, and he had big moments last year in the Champions Cup for them as well. He can score in big games against, you know, pretty big opposition. I don't know why he hasn't had that chance consistently. Maybe it's the likes of Calvin and Thacker Abrahams, but he definitely throws a spanner in the works when he gets on the ball.
Right. 28 and a half minutes we've been recording. I said we'd get a load of good meaty topics out of the way before we talked about the Jack Prendergast and Sam Crowley show. But I know we talk a little bit too much about this and the whole stuff gets blown up, but it is worth noting this is the first time these two players have come up against each other in a big proper game. So many people this weekend are going to Croke Park just to see that little sideshow in and of itself.
Yeah, but that's what we want in sport. I know I've seen some people giving out about people talking about the rivalry on social media.
My point is, like, talk about the rivalry. Like, I've no problem with people talking about it. It's when some people seem to think the only way you can talk about it is to start slagging 100%. Out one or the other.
That's what I mean. I don't
talk about it all you want, but just talk about why it's good.
Exactly. So I think that's what we want. We want to have two super talented players, and it's even more interesting when they're two rival provinces, you know, the bigger rivals, fighting for a shirt. And it could be, you know, it's, if you look at the Irish national team, I would say one of the weaknesses for Andy Farrell at the moment is that there's not as many head-to-heads for each position. Like, it's been quite a settled side, you know. So you, for your centres, you have effectively rotating, you know, Gary, Robbie and Bundy, you know. Mm-hmm. So, but it's not like Gary versus Robbie, or like potentially this year it'll be Craig versus Gibson Park. But up till now, it's been clearly Gibson Park has been number one.
Do you think Craig is closing that door?
Yeah, well, I'm sure he has a chance. I mean, at some stage, like, he will topple the king, you know, and maybe that's, maybe he won't before Gibson Park retires, but I would imagine he will. Like, Hooker's, the two first choice Hookers are in the same province. So it's probably even more focused because of the fact that it's so settled in Ireland.
Yeah.
And this is the position that's most up for grabs, I would say. I think it's brilliant. Ollie Campbell did an interview a couple of weeks ago in a newspaper, and it went back to him versus Tony Ward and the kind of controversy in Ireland in an age pre-social media. But what he did say, and I thought was interesting, was that he hopes that Sam and Jack realise that they're actually now bonded for life, whether they like it or not. Because effectively, in 20, 30 years' time, when they're going to after dinners, people will remember it as the battle that we're going through at the moment. You know what I mean? Like, Raj and Johnny are kind of bonded for life, whether they like it or not.
In 20 years' time, they're going to have a podcast together.
Yeah, maybe. No, I'm not. And he meant bonded for life in a good way. He wasn't like... he also said that they get on well and there's respect there and all, which there is, but it's some of the fan stuff around it that's not respectful. I actually can't wait to see this. I would go walk to Croke Park on Saturday just to see their head-to-head, because I'm fascinated to see how they both perform under pressure, you know? And Jack has had two games where, or a game and a half, where he's looked really composed. So obviously came off the bench against Scarlets, played 80 against Cardiff, was rested against Edinburgh, and looked ready. And then Sam has had moments where he's looked really good, and then obviously some questionable moments as well. In a difficult environment with a team beaten up in South Africa, then rested for last week. So this is it. And like, it's easier for Sam because effectively he's got better players around him. Sorry, he's got more experienced internationals and Lions around him. But yet you'd fancy Jack to just lay down a marker, I think, and do his talking on the field as well. So yeah, I can't wait to see both of them go head to head.
You do wonder then, Johnny, as well, how much of a bearing will this game have on selection in November? Because Andy Farrell has kind of often been a man who has kind of, he has made up his own mind independent of form. And I know a lot, he has a lot of critics for that, but on the flip side, it's probably why Ireland have been such a consistent team under him as well.
Yeah, he does have his own way of selecting it. And I think, like, it'd be naive for him to pick on a head-to-head in teams that he has no control over, you know? So, like, if, as Bernard said, if Sam is getting a more of an armchair right, he's going to look like a more composed player. And I think that's probably going to stand to Jack in the long term. Like, he hasn't always had that armchair right, but he has a lot of grit and determination. And I think we're yet to see that part probably from Sam, like when they were behind in South Africa. Can he take the game with a scruff of the neck? I think Jack has shown that plenty of times. But, like, you know, then again, are Ireland ever going to be in that position where they're going to have to really dig it out? Of course they are. They've lost games. But, like, it's not the same kind of gritty, chip-on-your-shoulder kind of style. I think Jack has that in spades. But Sam, like, they're both well able, both fulcrum of their club side, the provincial side. I think it will stand for a lot when you see them going head to head. You see a lot of character. You see a lot of qualities in those individual players. But you can't then equate, like, you can't put Jack into the Leinster team and see how he performs. You can't vice versa put Sam into the Munster team. Like, you're never going to get that answer if you're waiting for that head to head. So it's relevant, but it's not fully relevant, if you know what I mean. But regardless of that, for sport itself, away from the national team, and some bit to do with the national team, but the head-to-head itself is going to be a good crack. You know, the game itself, like, who can kind of... It's nearly bettering the opposite number by not actually thinking about them at all. Getting your own team running well, running your own game strategy, game plan, getting your own players into the game. And if you do that and get your team on the front foot, you'll have a better chance of beating your opposite number.
And, like, throw in the fact as well that there's an international window coming up in 2 weeks. That is just another lovely little ingredient to throw into that pot.
Yeah, and on Saturday, one will be wearing red and one will be wearing blue, and they have to do whatever they need to do for 80 minutes to try and get their team over the line. And I think, like, going back to when I played in Leinster against Munster, like, Felipe against Raj was like in box office, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And Munster spent most of the game trying to get at Felipe and get under his skin. And sometimes he reacted positively, and sometimes he reacted negatively. And it had a fascinating outcome on the game. And then it was Rog, Johnny. For a while, we hoped it would be Joey, Johnny. But it only happened a couple of times, you know what I mean? So this isn't
and
new.
They were nice and spicy as well. Nice spicy, you take that one Munster one down in Thomond Park.
100%.
I saw Finian Witcherly was talking about it. He was asked about it this week, about throwing Johnny Sexton down on the ground. You want a bit of that, don't you?
100%. Like, I don't think anyone left the ground on any of those days like feeling shortchanged, you know, and I hope and sure that we get a full-blooded contest and we find out more about both players. We know both of them are very talented, but I think it's great. I love it.
We'll put a pin in Jack Crowley and Sam Prendergast for now, and we'll revisit it next week. One final thing I did want to talk about Leinster and Munster before we move on to Ulster, who are brilliant at the weekend. Did want to give a mention to Joshua Kenny. Mm. Came on for Leinster at the weekend, made his debut. Someone I'd say a lot of rugby fans didn't know anything about up until a couple of weeks ago. Only got a couple of touches on the ball, but like showed a lovely little spark every time he got his hands in possession. A couple half breaks, nothing extravagant, but for someone we didn't know anything about a few weeks ago, he's certainly one to watch.
But if you remember when the sevens were closed down, we were told that the review said sevens doesn't have any impact on producing players with 15s. I think Joshua Kenny, or as he's known as JJ, I think anyone know, apparently someone in his friends group saw the team sheet and sent it around the WhatsApp group back in Bray, and no one recognised Josh Kenny, because no one knows who Joshua Kenny is. He's JJ. No one expected him to be in the squad. So it didn't have the impact that they intended to. So apparently he's known as only as JJ. But yeah, his background is interesting. So didn't make the Junior Cup team in Pres Bray. Kind of late developer. As a sixth year, he scored 24 tries. So obviously showed something, but didn't get picked up by the Leinster Sub-Academy or anything like that. But the sevens gave him an opportunity. So he's with the sevens for 2 years, and that kept him in rugby as such. And Leinster took him in this summer and gave him a chance. And by all accounts, every time he gets the ball or has got the ball at training, like, people have been going, wow, this fella has something. And that, like, it's not easy to get on the bench for a game against the Sharks, you know. Mm-hmm. When you look at the amount of players Leinster have, the players who've been identifying since they're 13, 14 has been super talented. And they may still come through and pass out JJ or whatever. But I think it's fascinating that apparently he's played very few games of adult 15s. Potentially, what I was told was he played against Cardiff in the preseason for Leinster and Saturday night. Maybe he had played a few more, but that was the talk from Bray. So he's very raw. But yes, he got the ball twice and he took on Mapimpi and took him on the outside, fended, kept the ball alive. So, I love seeing someone from a non-traditional background get in. And also for Pres Bray, that generation of Pres Bray, so you've got Finn Tracy and Ben Murphy now contracted. Jack Murphy contracted, and then Ben was a couple of years older, which is great.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And he's certainly one to keep an eye out for the rest of the season as well. I'm going to move on to Ulster. 28-7 winners against Bulls. 2 bonus point wins out of 2 for Richie Murphy. Obviously, they've had the postponement in between. The one downside coming out of this game, Cormac Izuchukwu has a foot injury, going to see a specialist. I presume he hasn't travelled with the squad down to South Africa. We'll find out later today, I would say, what impact it's having on his Ireland chances this November. But, Johnny, early in the season, I know, small sample size, is that the best performance of the season from one of the Irish provinces?
Yeah, I think it was really good. Now, again, like Bernard said about the Sharks, I wonder what the Bulls were really up to. But yeah, I think, you know, the first half, 7-7 and a bit of a stalemate in a sense, wasn't it? But the way Ulster came out in the second half and kicked on was quite impressive, actually. And, you know, Jack Murphy is going about his business quietly, but he's quite effective, isn't he? When you see him making line breaks and playing players in around the place. Cormac Azechukwu, what a disaster. Like, I mean, did he hurt that foot going in over the try line? Was he just kind
Yeah,
of
it was
popped up?
the bull. There was a Bulls tackler came in, and like I don't think there was any malice in it whatsoever. I think he was just trying to make a last ditch tackle, but Izichuka kind of dived for the line, and he, I think, just landed on his foot, and his foot seemed to kind of get planted or squashed into the ground a little bit. Tried to run it off, but went off a couple of minutes later.
He looked like he, I don't know, was he kind of doing a bit of a hitch away from the tackle, or did he pop up with that foot? I was looking at it when I saw the injury, going, is that actually what happened? You know, when I saw the report. So that would be disastrous because he's been so good. But I think you're seeing that fulcrum of Ulster players. You know, we've spoken about the David McCanns, the Cormac Azechukwu, those kind of players. Like, they're getting time, like, aren't they? And any player, all they want is time, and you will get a really good fulcrum of a squad there. I think you have a good fulcrum, but Augustus going into the mix there, like, you do. They're a good side. I think, you know, James Hume is someone I'm quite interested in. You know, does he have a place back in national camp? I think long term, he's the right age profile with the centres that are going ahead of him. Still so talented, like, you know, I'd be a big fan of. He's silky, like, isn't he? He's got a good kind of box of tricks, and the basics are, his technical skills are quite good. Jacob Stockdale is someone that's probably, you know, Jamie Osborne just played him out of position at the beginning, but I think the Darcy Graham comment, he can be so good and have such basic errors at the same time. Unfortunately, I think there's still a bit of that in Jacob Stockdale, where we are seeing his moments come back, but I think even, was it his drop
The
ball that
knock-on of
get,
the restart,
yeah, knocking at the restart that allowed
and
Bulls back into
he
the
had one
cover.
against the Dragons as well.
It's just not going to cut it at the next level, you know. But that's the frustrating thing for him, because his big moments are big, but you know, you're getting a big disparity in what he produces. But no, Ulster are really good. I think they'd be very proud of it, especially the frustration the week before not being able to play. I think we saw a very good performance being kind of pent up inside them. Yeah,
Hey, Birch, on Stockdale, I know you
I'm prone.
on a rival podcast this week. Friendly rivalry, of course. But no, like you were talking up Stockdale. You like him.
Yeah, I
you,
like him.
You would like to see him. Would you like to see him get a crack at 15?
Yeah, I would. I'd love to see him get a crack at 15 against the All Blacks. And I'm a big fan of Osborne. And I think he's an unbelievable player to be able to fill positions. But I think behind Keenan, I think the fullback is so important now in terms of restarting the play, getting in the front foot, creating things. I think Stockdale's upside in terms of what he can do, and not many people in the world can do what he can do, you know, ball in hand. Like, he is a special talent, and we know where he was under Joe Schmidt, and he's obviously had a couple of years with injuries and loss of form, etc. So when he's starting to show that spark again, I'd like to see him rewarded, and for him to see that Andy Farrell can see it in him, and give him a chance. I don't think he's going to play left wing with James Lowe being fit. He's obviously, his left foot isn't as important when Ireland have James Lowe, but I think what he can do in terms of bringing him into the line, in terms of linking up in the backfield off counter attack, I'd be more him. I think against, to beat the All Blacks, to beat South Africa, to beat Australia, you need four or five players in your team who can finish something, you know, be a world class finisher or create something out of nothing. I think too many machine-like players, too many players who are just good at technically, will make it hard for us to beat the best teams in the world.
Johnny, All Blacks, 15 jersey, Jamie Osborne, Jacob Stockdale, or AN other. Have you a writing candidate you want to put in the mix?
Oh, I'd probably lean toward, well, I think Jamie Osborne would be picked. I see what Bernard's saying, and actually, now is probably the time. If you're going to get Jamie Osborne back into being a full-fledged international, now is probably the time, to be fair, to give him that next step of confidence. Because, you know, like I said, the small bits and pieces that he gets wrong in an international game is going to be very important. Like, you put a scrum under your post in an international team, like, you're in one of those games, it's criminal, you know. So, but I do think there's a management in him, there's a player in there, that you will get back onto the international stage if you nurture that, and just, you do have to force that confidence through to the next step, I would say. But at the same time, Andy Farrell doesn't really work like that. If he sees mistakes and a kind of a loss of concentration, he doesn't really tolerate it, does he? I think we've seen that in the past. If you're not good enough, you know, gone. And so I see him picking Jamie Osborne, but you know, you could nurture Jacob Stockdale back into that 15 jersey. I can see it, Chet.
On the Ulster performance of the weekend overall, I know they pulled away in the second half and it ended up being a very, very comfortable win in the end. But I wouldn't put this in the same bracket as the Sharks not showing up against Leinster, because in fairness to the Bulls, like, they kind of only had one weapon, but it was a massive scrum. And that is a considerable weapon. Wilco Lowe was back. He had Ulster and all sorts of bother in the first half. They were giving up scrum penalties. They were having to deal with a lot of trouble coming out of that. They were playing a lot of, you know, they were getting pinned back into their own half. So they had to go through considerable periods of that game defending and getting themselves out of a little bit of trouble. And just when the opportunity arose early in the second half, they got a couple of chances, took them, and just very, very professionally ended the game with 20 minutes to go.
Totally. It was a totally different game because they were actually in an arm wrestle for 40 minutes and they could have cracked. And historically, they have cracked and had to chase down like a 20-point deficit. So I think Willie Falloon, you know, he'll be absolutely delighted at how comfortable it looked. I think against the Dragons, they can see the 3 tries, 1 was from kickoff, so that's not really relevant. But they looked vulnerable against the Dragons defensively, whereas against the Bulls, I thought they looked really, really cohesive, really well connected, really aggressive. There was a line speed there. And then once the Bulls couldn't capitalise on that scrum dominance, I think the Bulls lost a bit of spirit and a bit of heart, but it was down to Ulster not caving in. So, and then
held them all up over the line as well in the first half. Like, there was a lot of hard graft. No,
I think they're the tips that Richie would be showing. And then in the second half, he saw Ulster continuing with the attacking variety and accuracy that we saw against the Sharks. And they have good players. Like, Ulster are good players. Augustus, I thought he only came to Ulster for the money or whatever, but and I'm sure they had a part in it, but apparently one of his reasons for coming to the URC was to be able to play against the South African franchises more regularly and show Razzie Erasmus that he's a viable candidate for Springbok selection. And, like what a performance he had. You know, we know he's very explosive, but he really brought it the other night. And you need your foreign players to give you something a little bit different, like he did, like Angus Bell hopefully will do when he comes in after November. And that'll allow the likes of McCann, Izichukwu, Stockdale, Hume, etc., express themselves more easily. So, yeah, really positive for Ulster. And they're going to play the Sharks and the Lions, who at the moment look like they're vulnerable. I know the Sharks will be better at home, but Ulster could be in a real good position after round 5.
Yeah, if you're putting yourself in Richie Murphy's shoes now, are you thinking you come home from South Africa with 4 points?
5, I think, yeah.
Five is the benchmark, would you say, is it?
Yeah.
4, a little bit disappointed.
I think they could potentially, yeah, they'll get one, they'll get an attacking bonus against the Lions. It's just, obviously, those games in Johannesburg can be a little bit crazy. But I think they'll beat the Sharks. I think the Sharks are vulnerable. I know they'll have a couple of box back, but they have to be low on confidence. You know, drawn to the Dragons, losing your 2 games away from home without a lot of positives in it, this is the week you'd want to be playing them.
Johnny, to move it on then to Connacht. Connacht and Cardiff on Saturday. I was really looking forward to that game last weekend. Two of the best teams to watch in the URC. Some of the most exciting rugby, with 5 minutes to go, it was 7-3. And both sides had butchered about 15 try opportunities between them. It was just one of those games, and I would say made for an excruciating Monday morning rewatch for Stuart Lancaster.
Yeah, not a very good marketing tool, was it? I thought it was just a stalemate of mistakes. There's moments in it, I think, like Tom Bowen, isn't it? The Cardiff winger.
Looks very, very good.
Just electric. Like, you talk about energy, like, he's got it all. But, and obviously a very good performance against Munster as well, and the connection with Callum Sheedy. Sheedy can be funny. Like, his kicking game doesn't look like, you know, it doesn't look fluid off his boot, but some of the stuff he creates is so troubling. And that connection with Tom Bowen is obviously something that we'll be looking at for the full season, and Wales will be looking at as well. It was disappointing. Like, we've seen provinces go to Cardiff and struggle in the past, but they wouldn't struggle to score. Like, you struggle to stop conceding, you know, and that wasn't the case at the weekend. It was quite a funny game, actually. You wouldn't have expected something like that.
They could have had 6 or 7 tries easily. It was real simple stuff butchered. It was final passes. It was knock-ons under very little pressure.
I'm surprised they had so many chances, because they actually didn't really try a lot to play that. They were very kick focused.
Most of those chances were probably like the final quarter of the game.
Yeah, they picked it up then.
They were very, very dominant in the final 20 minutes when they were 7-3 behind and trying to chase it. But even in that 20 minute period alone, I think you could easily pick out 5 or 6 clear cut try scoring opportunities.
Yeah, it's a bit of a, like, the bubble's not burst, but it's a bit of a reality check for them, or just a marker for Stuart Lancaster that. And that has been the issue with Connacht, is consistency, you know, in the past. But he obviously would hope to change that. They've no divine right to go to Cardiff. Cardiff are probably the best Welsh team.
Yeah.
But certainly them and the Ospreys are way ahead of Dragons and Scarlets. But I think they'll be disappointed with how lacking energy they were for the first 60 minutes. It was a really bizarre Connacht performance, and I know Cardiff were poor as well, but 4G pitch, nice conditions, both teams on the back of positivity. Like, Cardiff were delighted to get a losing bonus in Munster, having rotated the side.
Got two out of Munster, was it?
Yeah, they got 4 tries, sorry. They were delighted with that. They'd won their first game. Connacht were delighted with Benetton getting the attacking bonus, and you just expect more. Yeah, it was like a first round game rather than a third round game. I know Connacht had a game postponed, but still, you would expect them to be up and running.
Is there any sense you get from it that potentially so much work in the last 3-4 months, however long that summer has been, so much work has gone into improving Connacht's defence that maybe they are spending a little bit less time on the attack, and that's probably why players aren't as connected with each other and you're seeing some of those passes being half a second off?
Yeah, well, look, John Muldoon said it's 50-50 attack defence, so whereas it was 70-30 attack defence. So yeah, they've obviously spent less time on attack compared to where they were, but I think it's a better split. You know, they needed to fix their defence, and I think Stuart he'd be frustrated that they weren't better. Like, when you've had attacking mindset for 3 or 4 years, you should be able to have an equal split in defence and attack. That should be embedded. They have a lot of the same players. Like, there hasn't been a mass overhaul of the squad. I just think for whatever reason, they just look lethargic and a little bit off and lacking energy, and they can never afford to do that. They're always going to have that as a bare minimum.
But Johnny, it actually sets up now, and Ulster's result as well actually sets up this Friday's game against the Bulls brilliantly, because there is now I know they're only 2 games in, but there's a little bit of pressure on Connacht now to just kind of respond after that. They got their 3 lines coming back in. Bundiaki, Finlay Beelam and Mac Hansen, we assume, are all going to be involved this weekend. Bulls have been kind of wildly inconsistent, even though they've got 2 wins and a defeat. Like, they're conceding so many points. Their defence is very, very open. They're still probably getting to grips with Johan Ackerman. So they'll be incredibly unhappy with what they did in Belfast last week. It's actually set up to be a really, really interesting game on Friday night.
Yeah, I think an interesting game of how both teams react, you know, and I would expect a reaction of the Connacht, especially you bring, you know, De Bruyne and Bundiaki into the middle of the field. He can create as well, but most of it is through sheer destruction, isn't it? He can distribute, definitely, but his presence in the middle of the field, Mac Hansen, you know, box of tricks, and Finlay Beelam giving him a cornerstone. So, like, I think there's a lot coming back into their team, but I think the frustrating thing, Bernard kind of alluded to it, the kind of seesaw of, like, oh, we'll focus on our structures, so our attack comes down. Like, I'm sure many teams will be happy to go to Cardiff and concede 14 points because you'd expect to score, you know, and that's probably the part that will frustrate them, that they have been so good in attack that they forgot to attack. Because, like, I think long-term, you look at the game and say, well, they have put the shackles on it a small bit in the right way. They have put some structures into their game. They aren't just free-flowing and loose. I think that's going to be important to make them harder to beat. And to make them, to allow them to control games in the long term. But I don't think, you know, I think when you look at a season, you'd be looking at going to Cardiff to get your away win in Cardiff. I don't think you'd be relying on beating South African teams, and then they'll go and beat the Bulls, and it'll be, Jesus, we can beat the Bulls, but we threw one away in Cardiff last week. I think that'll be the mindset. That'll be the part that will frustrate them. When they get big wins, they look back at the ones that they've lost, and the Cardiff one is certainly one that will have gotten away, especially when Cardiff didn't go all singing and dancing on their 4G pitch and score a lot of mad tries. One was an intercept, you know, that they'll be pretty frustrated with. It's from their own possession. So I think in the long term, it'll stand for something in terms of putting structure on them. But when they get big wins, they'll be frustrated. This was the one they gave up points on.
Final word to you, Bernard, on that?
I think Connacht beat the Bulls. I think you get a big reaction. They're way better than that. And the Bulls are very vulnerable defensively. And I think Connacht with Beelum and Mack and Bundy coming in, they'll be a little bit better equipped to deal with that power that we saw dominate Ulster. I think the Connacht scrum is tighter, better technically, a little bit lower than Ulster was. And yeah, it won't be as big an entry point into the game. So Connacht to get back on track and good week for the Irish provinces. Hopefully, obviously, there'll be hopefully a winner. There could be a draw in Croke Park, but I think we could have three out of four wins this weekend.
Yeah, and we'll see plenty of big internationals back as well. So that's Connacht against the Bulls, Friday night, 7:45 p.m. kickoff. Sharks against Ulster down in Durban. That is Saturday afternoon at 3 p.m. And then 5:15 p.m. the big one in Croke Park, Leinster versus Munster. Live commentary on Saturday Sport on RT Radio 1. Bernard, Johnny, thanks so many for joining us as always on the podcast, and we'll speak to you again soon.